bile and mucus and air to be himself, one who thinks that his wife and family are permanently his own, one who thinks that an earthen image or the land of his birth is worshipable, and one who visits holy places just to take bath there, but who never identifies with, feels kinship with, visits or listens to saintly persons, such a person is no different from a cow or an ass. So, heavy statement. In any case, Bhagavatam is saying such a person is on bodily platform. So, the real purpose of meeting saintly people is to hear from them, to get some knowledge that will, you know, benefit us. So, Daksha had the opportunity to associate with Shiva, and he didn't take that opportunity. So, another proof that he was on the bodily platform of life. He didn't have proper understanding. So, he didn't take advantage of this wonderful association. Now, even in general, it is explained that one who gets great gift of human form of body, but does not use this human form of body for spiritual advancement, such a person is called Kripana, or miser. So it is great misfortune to have, you know, opportunity to understand higher subjects and not use that opportunity. And also it is bad fortune to come in contact with the exalted personality and not take advantage of that association. So Daksha was misfortunate. He had contact with Shiva, he didn't take advantage of it. So he was more concerned with these social conventions, you know, family relationships, than actual advancement. Yesterday we heard in the classroom, actually the topmost consideration of seniority is actually who is more spiritually advanced. And there were a few examples given. And the whole Bhagavatam is like that. When Parikshit was cursed and sat on the bank of the Ganges, all the sages of the universe gathered there, exalted personalities like Vyasa, who is incarnation of Krishna, who wrote down the Vedic scriptures, Narada Muni was there, and many others. Still, when they were sitting there waiting what is going to happen, then Shukadeva Goswami came by. Shukadeva Goswami, he was like 16 years old. He was not the oldest in the assembly. And when he came, you know, he was wandering around like Avadhut. He was 16 years old, walking around naked. And what did they do? They didn't chase him away. They gave him the seat to speak on spiritual subjects, subject matter, because he was the most exalted. Now, of course, if he would have some problem and someone would come in naked, probably he wouldn't offer him the asan to sit and speak. But these sages could understand the position of Shukadeva Goswami. So they gave him opportunity and they wanted to hear from him. As mentioned, Daksha was not that fortunate. He couldn't recognize Shiva's greatness. So now he is actually saying how, you know, he gave his daughter to Shiva, but Shiva was unworthy. Now he is comparing here Shiva and his daughter. Daksha is comparing Shiva and his daughter Sati. So he's saying that Shiva's eyes are like monkeys. This is not really glorification. To give compliment to some person, you don't say, you know, your eyes like eyes like are like monkeys. So we don't recommend using that. You know, if you're going for a date with a lady, want to impress lady, you don't say, you know, my lady, you have eyes like monkey. You might not get the desired effect. So actually he is insulting Lord Shiva, right? That reminds me of another situation where also comparison with monkey was made. And it is in connection with Ramanujacharya, great acharya from South India, from Sri Sampradaya. So he was married at the young age, I mean, when he was still a teenager, but then very quickly after his father passed away. So he took his wife and mother and went to a place called Kanchipuram. And there he started to study under one teacher whose name was Yadav Prakash. But this teacher was not a Vaishnava, and Ramanuja, you know, he was. Ramanuja was a Vaishnava. So this teacher was speaking all kinds of Mayavad philosophy, impersonal philosophy, not accepting the Supreme Personality of Godhead and devotional service to Him. So, one day, the teacher was giving explanation from Chandogya Upanishad. He took one Sanskrit shloka and then, you know, translated it and explained it. And in that shloka, actually the Supreme Lord is glorified and He is addressed as Golden Purusha. And but then a part of the shloka, this Yadav Prakash translated that this Golden Purusha has beautiful lotus eyes which are red like a monkey's backside. And all the scriptures are, you know, glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you know, this for sure couldn't be proper translation or interpretation of the shloka. So, Ramanujacharya, being devotee of the Lord, he was very hurt with this statement, you know, he just started to cry. Of course, he was a student and he was very humble, he didn't, you know, start throwing stones at the teacher or something like that, you know, screaming at him. He was just disappointed, started to cry. We've heard a lot about how Krishna is hurt when devotees are offended. But the same, it is also the same when Krishna is offended, then the devotee is hurt. Sadavo hridayam mayam, sadunam hridayam paham. Krishna, Narayan is saying, devotees are in my heart and I'm in the heart of devotees. So when we hurt devotees, we actually hurt Krishna's heart. And when we hurt Krishna, then we are hurting devotees. So teacher noticed that Ramanujacharya was disturbed by his statements and then asked him, you know, what happened or what is wrong. So then Ramanujacharya gave another explanation of Sanskrit shloka, which was that the Lord has beautiful lotus eyes which are like, or the eyes which are like lotuses which are blooming because of sun rays. And so Ramanujacharya was very much disturbed by improper explanation and by blasphemy of the Supreme Lord. Actually, it is proper to become angry when someone blasphemes the Lord or Lord's devotees. Although in the preaching movement we should still be careful how we react, even if we get disturbed by someone's improper behavior. Yeah, but the reaction is proper, the feelings are proper. So it is not really wise to criticize the Supreme Lord in front of devotees. And devotees are of different kinds, especially, you know, members of certain religions are even more touchy if you speak something about God. They might chop your head off. But even Krishna's devotees are not really happy. In any case, there was one story about a person who was hippie at that time, later became a devotee. When he first time met the devotees, and devotees were doing Harinam and they had books and bookstall and some pictures of Supreme Lord. So this person approached the devotee who was there with books, and the devotee had a big picture of Mahavishnu, you know, the one that is sometimes on a Ishopanishad book, you know, four-handed Supreme Lord with a snake above him. So this person asked, you know, who is this? And the devotee said, this is God. from someone coming from material world, you know, you never heard about the form of God, how God looks and so on. So, okay, this is God, but this is a picture. And he said, yeah, what if I break it? And the devotee said, well, I guess I'll have to kill you. So the devotee wouldn't take off, wouldn't allow Krishna to be offended. Of course, the devotee would not do that, but still, you know, his mood was there to protect Krishna and being unsatisfied with the blasphemy of the Supreme Lord. So the devotee is very protective when it's in a relationship with Krishna, in a relationship with preaching movement, and also with other devotees, especially spiritual master. There is another story that you know, the famous musician George Harrison. So he was famous and he was rich. So when you are rich, it is a problem because so many people are around you, but you don't know if they're honest, right? They say they're your friends, but many times they just want your money. So many ladies come, they say they love you. Actually, they love your money. So it's hard to know, you know, who is really honest. So once George Harrison was with Shyama Sundar Prabhu, and I don't know what was, you know, his mood at that time, but he gave some not really nice remarks about Srila Prabhupada. I don't know what he was dissatisfied with or what was he disturbed with. He said something, you know, which was not nice about Srila Prabhupada. And Shyama Sundar Prabhu just couldn't tolerate it. Just smacked him. Just gave him one, what happened? Gave him one slap. And from that time on, Joe Cherison understood, you know, this person is not after my money. If he would be after my money, he would just keep his mouth shut. He wouldn't create disturbance. But he was willing to even destroy his relationship with another person just because he said something bad about his spiritual master. So the devotees don't like when Supreme Lord or Supreme Lord's devotees are offended. But Daksha is doing exactly that here. He's saying that Shiva's eyes are like monkeys, and then he compares it to Sati's eyes, which are like those of a deer cub. So having the deer eyes, that comparison is also sometimes given when it's spoken about gopis, that they have deer-like eyes, very beautiful eyes. So Daksha is saying, you know, I gave my daughter to this person who is so ugly, my daughter is actually so beautiful. So, and he is so ungrateful that he doesn't even show respect to me. He just wants to prove why Shiva's behavior is improper. So, Shiva was supposed to get two good wives. It is always there, this consideration of trying to find husband and wife who will be compatible, right? Who will be equal, who will match nicely together. And there are different considerations. Usually one is looking for persons who have similar nature, you know, whose minds are working in a similar way. Thinking, feeling and willing. Otherwise, when people live together and they, you know, understand different situations in life in completely different ways, it is quite difficult. But one also looks at people match, you know, in terms of the culture, and intellectually, emotionally, in many different ways. But modern thing is just to look at the externals. Being attracted by body. And Daksha is also giving this comparison. And sometimes, you know, people just overdo it. They're so concerned about, for example, the skin. They say, oh, this person is too dark, I cannot marry this person. Or They go around looking for a husband and wife with the measuring tape. Oh, you're 1 centimeter too high. I cannot marry you. But if you would be 1 centimeter shorter, then that would be a perfect marriage. Well, it doesn't make sense. If, you know, just adjusting the externals would make a relationship perfect, then it would be quite easy. But, yeah, Daksha is just looking at this external thing, not considering the spiritual qualification of his son-in-law. But in general, it is understood that we don't, as mentioned in the beginning, we approach simply persons to hear from them, to hear spiritual subject matters. We don't go to them because they are beautiful. So that is not the qualification of a saintly person, that we look for beauty. Some saintly persons or exalted personalities also have very nice bodily features. When there is an example or a description of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is described how beautiful he was. Or even Haridas Thakur or Narottam Das Thakur. But not always sages look, you know, very beautifully. Because Brahmanas are not known for their looks, Kshatriyas are those who are, you know, beautiful, tall and muscular and so on. Very good looking, not Brahmanas. And especially when they perform austerities, they neglect their bodies. So they might look, you know, even scary sometimes. Like in an example of when Vyasadeva was requested to continue the dynasty of the Kurus and beget children. Then, when he approached Ambika, when she saw Vyasadeva, she just closed her eyes. You know, then we can understand that he was not looking that good. We went yesterday for Harinam, and we saw many different personalities, you know, many different characters you meet in the town. But I don't remember anyone looking so bad that I would, you know, just cover my eyes. So you can just imagine how Vyasadeva must have looked. She was completely shocked. And Ambalika, when she had to engage in romantic affairs with Vyasadeva, she just turned pale. She's completely white. What is this? Who is this? So it is not that, you know, exalted personalities always look beautiful. For Chanyaka Pandit, it was also said that he was not beautiful. So we don't approach saintly persons to look at their beauty. We come to hear from them. So the next criticism given by Daksha here is that Shiva is not civilized. And the question comes up what civilization actually means. And the scriptures describe that being civilized means following Shastra, following the laws of God. You know, when there is description that there are many kinds of human beings, but rarely they are civilized. Civilized are those who are following Shastra. Civilized human beings. So to say that Shiva is not civilized, that makes no sense. Because we know that Shiva is the most exalted devotee. He is also counted as one of the Mahajans. Like Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma, Balir, Vyasakir, Vayam. Yamaraj is saying, you know, there are 12 authorities all together, and Shambhu is one of them. So, you know, his authority on pure devotional service or Bhagavad Dharma. So to say he is uncivilized, he doesn't know how to behave, just makes absolutely no sense. And also calling him impure, maybe from the external point of view, because Shiva is many times associated with low creatures and staying at the crematoriums and so on, one can say, you know, he's impure. But whenever we have even our yagyas, there is one shloka from Garuda Purana quoted, Oma pavitra pavitrova sava vastam gatopiva yasmari pundarikshaksham sabaya abhyantara shuchi. So either one is pure or impure or having passed through all different conditions in this material world. If one can remember the lotus eyed Krishna, then he becomes internally and externally pure. So the most important factor of purity is Krishna consciousness. So if one is Krishna conscious, then he is actually pure. And again, how can you say that Lord Shiva is not Krishna conscious in Bhagavatam? He is saying that he is all the time meditating upon Lord Vasudeva. So he is the purest of all. So Daksha is just getting himself in bigger and bigger troubles. Now, of course, he's saying he's just broken all the rules of proper behavior. He's not following the rules and regulations. But again, the basic rule, or the most important rule, is to serve Krishna. Even when Vali Maharaj asked Shukracharya what was Bali's fault, then he said mantratas tantratas chitra kala and then place and vastana saram karoti nishchidram anu sankirtanam tava. He is saying that even if there are discrepancies in pronouncing the mantra or observing the regulative principles, even if there are some imperfection in time, place or paraphernalia used for worship of the Supreme Lord, if the holy name is chanted, then everything becomes perfect. So, again, Shiva is the one who is following this rule, always meditating on Krishna, always glorifying the Supreme Lord. So to say that he is not following the rules is, again, nonsense. So being fully absorbed or engaged in devotional service, Lord Shiva has all the exalted qualities. Again, Bhagavatam is explaining that one who is always engaged in devotional service has all the good qualities of the demigods. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavate kinchana sarvari gunastatra samasate suraha harava bhaktasya kutoma madhuna manoratinasati davato bhavi. So, one who is devotee of the Lord has all good qualities, because all the good qualities are already present in the soul, and by devotional service we just remove all the covering so that these nice qualities can come out. But one who is working on a bodily platform, on a material platform, cannot have good qualities. Because those good qualities are always covered with selfish motivation, which pollutes everything in life. Anyway. So, this was Daksha's comparison of Lord Shiva and saying, you know, that Daksha's wife Sati is not good match for Lord Shiva. She is too good. Sometimes parents have this opinion about their child, you know, whether son or daughter. Oh, he's too good. He could get a better wife or a better husband. But how can Sati get a better husband than Lord Shiva? Not possible. And the other point that Prabhupada is making here in the purport is he is speaking about the usage of Vedic knowledge. Because he is making this comparison or analogy. But I was obliged to hand over my daughter to him just as one teaches the message of the Vedas to a Shudra. So, as giving knowledge to Shudra is not proper, it was also not proper that I gave sati to Shiva. Again, in Bhagavatam there is a shloka which is saying, tapo vidyacha vipranam nishreya sekare ube teva duvinita sya kalpete kartur anyata. It is saying that for a brahmana, austerity and learning are certainly auspicious. But when acquired by a man who is not gentle, such austerity and learning are most dangerous. So the point being, if someone doesn't have good character and he has big abilities, he can do a lot of harm. Just yesterday we heard about some example of demoniac creatures. And one of those personalities was mentioned, or that was mentioned, was Hitler. He was a very capable person. You know, he took the country out of economic depression. He motivated all the people, you know, that they are the best and they should do certain things. Just by speaking, he could inspire them so much. But what was the use of his great abilities? You know, they were misused and he created so much harm. It would be better if he would not be capable person. So that's why in Vedic tradition, people were very careful who should get certain powers, position, and so on. Like even in Ramayana, there is a story when that Shudra was performing austerities, and Lord Ram came and wanted to kill him. You know, because without a character, you get power. What will you do with that? Something good? Usually not. That's why the whole point of Vedic education is to develop character. That is the goal. Not to memorize many things, many facts, and being able to just repeat them, but to develop character. There is one story about, you know, how a character was valued by a teacher. There was a guru, and with his gurukul, some fields were also connected. You know, they were growing certain things for the maintenance of students in gurukul. So, in between, the fields were protected by dirt, by earth, so that water wouldn't come in. And in between fields, you know, there were channels with water. If they would need water to water the crops, they would use that water. So one day it was raining a lot, and it was raining till late in the evening. And then Guru told one disciple, you know, you go, you stay there at the field, and make sure the water doesn't come in and ruin the crops. So a student was there, you know, watching as a guard. And then slowly the water was rising and the water started to come into the field. So, you know, it broke the fence made of earth. So he tried to, you know, put some earth there to prevent the water coming in. You know, he was working hard, but was not successful. Water kept on coming. So finally he thought, you know, there is no other solution but just me lying down, you know, and protect the field. So he lay down and was there whole night. In the morning, Guru saw that student is not there. So he went and searched for him. And when he came to the field, he saw him and was still lying there, preventing water to come into the field. So then Guru was very pleased with him. And Guru said, you know, your education is finished. So I'll just perform the graduation ceremony and, you know, you have attained the goal of education. You show your proper character. You show your dedication, you show your service attitude, you show your willingness to sacrifice, not being afraid to accept austerities. So you can now go and, you know, benefit the society. So he said, you know, he didn't give him a writing test or something like that. He said, no, by these activities you've proved that you have developed your character. And now you are fit to be an active member of society. So that is the purpose of education. So we should first be strong and educated in spiritual subject matters. Then whatever we do in life, we can use properly. Right? Then we can be, you know, teacher, medical doctor, or whatever else. Because with proper character, proper understanding, if we are Krishna conscious, then we will use that for Krishna's pleasure and for benefit of everyone. But if that is lacking, then all education and all abilities might even bring troubles to ourselves and to others. That's why all Vaishyas, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas, they would go to Gurukul, they would be educated spiritually, and then later they would learn some other skills and things that they needed for their particular service or responsibilities. But the basis was spiritual. So that is also an important lesson for us, to get spiritually educated, fixed up in devotional service, in spiritual life. Then whatever we do in life will be successful and it will be beneficial. So that's why we follow process given by Srila Prabhupada. Sadhana Bhakti, waking up early in the morning, attending Mangalarati, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, many other services we do during the day. And we try also to share Krishna consciousness with others. So that they also can, you know, develop character, that they also can become spiritually advanced and make their life auspicious and successful. Okay, so these were some of the reasons why Daksha is saying, you know, my daughter should not be given to Shiva because Shiva's eyes were not looking properly. Because he is not civilized and he is not following rules and regulations. But in any case, or from all, you know, proper vision, Daksha was not right. He is just making certain excuses to blaspheme, to criticize Lord Shiva. And that's why it will not end up well for him. Okay. Any comment or question? Yes, please.
Thank you so much for the class.
Thank you.
Could you please explain, usually we are talking of Shiva, it's a Rudra Shiva. So how do we understand Sadashiv Tattva?
How do we understand Sadashiv Tattva? In general, Shiva is special Tattva, Tattva for himself. He is not an ordinary living being, and he is not a jiva, and he is also not the Supreme Personality of God. So he is in between. And in Nectar of Devotion, there is explanation how Krishna has 64 qualities, how Narayan has 60, Shiva has 55, and ordinary living being has 50 qualities of Krishna. So even from that description, we can see that Shiva is in between, between Krishna and an ordinary living being. Now, from one perspective, he can be accepted as, he's one of the guna avatars, right? So he can also be accepted as avatar of Supreme Lord. And in this form, the Supreme Lord actually deals with material nature. Krishna doesn't directly deal with material nature, but Lord Shiva deals with Durga, with material nature. So, what we should understand, or what this improper understanding is, that Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that He is Bhagavan, that He is the greatest, and that Krishna is His devotee. And people sometimes cite the example from Ramayana, that Lord Ram was worshipping Shiva. You know? So that proves that Shiva is the Supreme and Ram is subordinate to Shiva. But the point is, Lord Ram appeared to show how one should act perfectly, following all the rules of Shastra. So he set an example for ordinary human beings who should respect all superiors, including demigods, including Lord Shiva. But Shiva himself is saying in Srimad Bhagavatam that he worships Vasudev, that is in 4th canto of Bhagavatam. And the same point is expressed also by Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita. Kshiram yata dadivikara vishesha yoga tsanjayate nahitata prita prasti hirtu yasham bhutama pitata samupaiti karya govinda madi purusham tamaham bhajami. And there the comparison is made, you know, that Krishna and Shiva are so close that they are compared to milk and yogurt. You know, it's like almost the same, but still it's not the same. You know, if you have to use milk in certain preparation, you better not put yogurt in. And when you need yogurt, you don't put milk. They are still different. But, you know, it is just coming one from another. You add culture to milk or something, some acid, then it turns into yogurt. Milk turns into yogurt. So, they are very, very close. But still, Shiva is the one who is worshipping Krishna. And he is also one of the big authorities on devotional service, as we mentioned. Svayambhu Narada Shambhu. Shambhu is authority on devotional service to Krishna. And he is also the head of one of the sampradayas, or the cyclic successions coming from Krishna. So there is a Rudra Sampradaya, bona fide Vaishnava Sampradaya, where the head of that Sampradaya is Lord Shiva. So we don't separately worship Lord Shiva, because when one worships Krishna, then everyone else is worshipped automatically. Like Bhagavatam is giving the comparison, watering the root. When you water the root, all the leaves and branches, everything gets watered, right? So also when we worship Krishna, then all living entities or all demigods are pacified. Because sometimes people are afraid, oh my God, what if I don't worship this demigod? Maybe he will become angry or something. But there are 33 million of demigods, so how can I worship all of them? That's why it is recommended, you just worship Krishna, who is their head, and then all of them are pleased. So that is how we approach worship. But we show great respect to Lord Shiva. So we respect, in any case, Vaishnava respects anyone from small end, what to speak of, exalted devotee like Lord Shiva. But we don't do separate worship of Lord Shiva. We concentrate on worshiping Krishna. And with that, Shiva is very pleased.
So, my question was, the Rudra Shiva is the one who touches the material world.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between the Sadashiv and the Rudra Shiva?
I don't know. All I know is Sadashiv is supposed to have also existence outside of material world, that he has, you know, a planet outside of material jurisdiction. But when Shiva's expansion comes into this material world, he is called the Rudra. And then he comes from Brahma. He appears and it seems like he is son of Brahma. Although again, you know, he is more exalted. At least by that classification of number of qualifications or characteristics. He has more characteristics of Supreme Lord than Lord Brahma. But appears because of Brahma's anger, he appeared, you know, from the forehead of Lord Brahma. When Brahma was dissatisfied with four kumaras. Yeah.
How does Lord Shiva remove the false ego?
How does Lord Shiva remove the false ego? I can just, you know, try to answer how to remove false ego. What is the role of Shiva and all that, I don't know. The point is, we remove false ego by adopting the real ego. Ego means awareness of who I am. So false ego is when we think that we are someone we are not. If I think I'm a man or a woman or I'm, you know, Australian or American or whatever, this is all false ego. I mean, we may play a role at this particular time of, you know, being Australian or man or woman, and we should do it properly. But still, our real identity, the eternal identity, is different. It is that we are eternal servant of Krishna. So when we accept that true ego, then there is no question anymore of false ego. It is like having a glass which is empty, and then you get a task to get the air out. How will you get the air out? But if you pour the water in, then automatically there is no air anymore in the glass. So also, many people just speak about false ego and how to remove it, or how we should not act based on false ego. Even materialistic people, you know, they can understand that acting out of false ego is not good. But they have no idea how to remove it. So the ultimate solution is to accept the real ego. And the real ego, and I'm a spirit soul, eternal servant of Krishna. If we can do that, then for us, material existence is finished. Rantarachina Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.